Our guest on this week's Soundtracking is not necessarily a name you'll be familiar with, but as a movie fan, you certainly know the music he has had a key hand in. For in his 20 years at Ayre Studios, Jake Jackson has produced and engineered an extraordinary number of magnificent scores. As well as being Nick Cave and Warren Ellis's go-to guy, he's also worked on Gladiator, Pete's Dragon and Under the Skin, among around 300 or so films. Indeed, his work is featured on at least 20 episodes of this podcast, which is why we were so keen to get him on. The cues you'll hear throughout the course of our conversation sound the way they do thanks to Jake, including our opener, Rider Number One from The Proposition.
When said the moon to the stars in the sky, soon said the wind that followed him home. Who said the cloud that started to cry? Me said the rider is dry as a bone. How said the sun that melted the ground? Why said the river that refused to run? Where said the thunder without a sound? Here said a rider and took up his gun.
Jake Jackson, welcome to Soundtracking.
Thank you, Edith.
I'm going to paint the pictures to how we met. You introduced yourself to me when I was here. Was it with John S. Baird?
It was on Stan and Ollie.
Yeah, so he was up here doing the score and he very kindly invited me up to come and watch for a bit. I always feel like my depth when that happens. Why am I here? It's so much going on. But it was wonderful. And you introduced yourself and I was like, please, will you come on? And here you are.
Yeah.
Amazing amount of people who have actually been on the show that's how it happened. But what's also wonderful is the music that you've worked on has featured on the show numerous times.
Well, that's the kind of interesting thing about when I was like, you asked me, do you want me to be on it? And it was like, well, actually, yeah. I mean, like, there's like probably at least 20 or so that
totally.
I've heard that have music that I've been involved in. So yeah, it's kind of nice to be asked. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
But my kind of career has been, it's just funny, these things evolve and you forget about it and then a year later you hear the piece of music and go, I recognise that. What was that from?
Yeah, great. So you've been working at Ayre 20 years?
Yeah, now. I started as a runner January 1998. So I had 20 years now. And yeah, I started as a runner and I kind of did a music degree and my dad was in a prog rock band. So I'd always been around music, been in and out of studios with him. He had a little home studio, Tascam thing. But then I kind of, the world changed when I walked into Ayre Studios. Emotionally, and like, I never really knew it existed, you know, something like this really existed. And I didn't know that much about soundtracks back then, really. But then, you know, you come for an interview and you go, oh my God, this will change my life if I get it. And the story goes somewhere along the lines of, I was the second name on the list and the first person got the job, didn't like it, quit after a week, and I was the next person down the list. So I didn't hear anything for like maybe a month, and I was like, oh, that's gone. And then I got a phone call out of nowhere saying, do you want to start, like, you know, in 2 weeks? I was like, yeah. But it was like out of nowhere, and I was started on £7,000 a year.
Can you remember what was going on at that time? Some of the things that were kind of happening.
Yeah, I had my interview in this very room we're sat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember looking through, you can't see now, there's a TV in the way, but I remember sitting through there, and there were some of the engineers there who I later became friends with, but they were playing with a new CD player that turned up. We'd had like 100, like an interchangeable thing. It was for sound effects, I think.
Yeah.
It's like 100 CD player. And I was talking about this being the future. And here we are now, with
wow.
You know what I mean? But I remember it very clearly. And I remember being my interview here. And then I remember being sat out where you were sat. In fact, exactly where you were sat just now. Under one of the pews, outside.
Yeah.
Opposite the reception, opposite Glenn on reception. Same security guard. And yeah, then it became a blur. Then I got the job and I started. And I was working on Message in a Bottle, I think it was.
Okay.
And I was with the band making teas and coffees. It was a school, but it had like a rhythm section band, yeah. And that was like 4 or 5 days doing that, and it was like, wow, this is insane. Yeah, totally insane. And then the first time you hear an orchestra play in that room, and you step out there to change some headphones, and it was just like, it was extraordinary. Yeah. And it was chills, everything you kind of associate with music, but then like knowing you're stuck there, and you know, this could be your life.
Yeah, and it has been for 20 years. How would you describe your role now? Because you encompass quite a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it evolves all the time, my role. What with the way that the industry's changing, the way that the world's changing, the way that everything's changing. I mean, I started as a runner, and it was a tape op. You know, I was one of the last old-fashioned tape ops, ran tape machines. We were recording onto 2-inch tape. Over the first couple of years, I did a few weeks on a Coldplay record. That was really fun. But I knew that I wanted to do soundtracks. Yeah. So I did that, and then I worked really hard, obviously. And it was a time when the diary system was bits of paper, and the studio diary, studio manager, Alison, who's still the studio manager now, would write it on a bit of paper, and I'd sneak through on the weekend when I was there and look, see what was coming up, and then like ask to be on the really cool sessions I could see coming up.
Amazing.
So I'd be like, and she'd be like, but you've just finished another one, and it's like, you know, you've done a week without a day off, and I'm like, yeah, but I really want to do the session. She was like, okay, fine. She really loved the fact that she had somebody who was really enthusiastic,
yeah,
and wanted to do it, and so it was amazing. And I mean, those are the days when we were doing like kind of Gladiator, Wigan Gladiator, things like that, you know, like back to back. It was extraordinary. These amazing film after amazing film. It still happens now, of course, but back then. So I became
the hardest working man.
Yeah, I did. I mean, with me and another guy, we both progressed up together. He was one stage ahead of me, and then I kind of assisted him, and so we kind of worked up together, and it was amazing. And I kind of came up for air, like kind of 8 years later, and realised, oh, blimey, I'm 28, 29 now, and I really wanted to be an engineer by that point. But then Alison was like, you're still a bit young, really. You're vastly experienced. Just sit on it. Work hard and you'll start cultivating relationships, which I did. So I started working with Murray Gold. So I started working with him and on Doctor Who, you know, 100 episodes of Doctor Who later, you know, that was that. So they were all right. They said, just like, just hold on. And then these things happened, you know, like, so I started to do more and more engineering a bit. And then I started working with Nick Cave and Warren Ellis, which was amazing.
How did that start?
That was one of those funny things where they wanted an engineer and they were given a bunch of names. And I think the first person wasn't available or didn't want to do it or whatever. I can't remember. And I was the next person on the list again. And it was the first time I was working in an outside studio. So I'd been working at Air for 8 years or 8, 9 years, I guess. And then I went to Airedale to do that, and it was the proposition. obviously it's a story by itself, but I mean, I remember not that much about it. I remember getting Nick's phone number and asking to give him a call, so I did that. I think I had a chat.
Hello, Mr. Keith.
Yeah. And then I was in the middle of another session, I seem to remember. This is kind of flooding back. But I remember being on another session in the hall and during a break, like having his number and like, you know, finger shaking, calling him up and having a quick chat about it. And they just said they were going to work, you know, was going to come into the studio and work, which just didn't make any sense to me because everything I'd done up to that point was pre-composed ahead of time and we just come and record the orchestra. Yeah. And this was Nick and Warren. In fact, for the first 3 or 4 days, it was just Warren because Nick had a family thing. And so for 3 or 4 days, I was with Warren Ellis in the studio, just making sounds and making ideas. I'm quite a straight kind of guy. My dad wasn't, and I kind of rebelled against my parents.
Yeah.
And so I was there, you know, like kind of not knowing what to expect because, you know, you can have a 2-minute conversation, but you know, the reputation of these guys is extraordinary. And I didn't know what to expect, obviously, but then we just started making music and we kind of started to get on. And, you know, it's one of those relationships that I don't know, really. They're just such nice guys and such fun to work with. It was just super fun. No, we
more like a kind of band recording.
Yeah, it was totally like a band. Yeah, kind of.
Traditional score recording.
Yeah, but the band they haven't really made any songs yet. So you just kind of like the way we've worked has evolved, but it's the same way. It's still like just go and make some noise and some sounds, and if it's good, mark it and then come back to it later. We've changed the way a little bit now how we do it, but still along the same way. Just make some sounds and kind of go crazy.
Good night, said the shadows have started to creep. Good night, said the sparrow, his bed he did make. Night, said the roses that folded to sleep. Good night, said the red and the white awake. The day, said the bird in the branch of a tree. Farewell, said the snake to the dying light. It is that the fish in the river of sleep. Goodbye, said the writer. Goodbye, good night.
So yeah, I started as an engineer with them, going back to your original question, and then they started crediting me as a producer, which was great. And so I started thinking about myself as a producer a little bit, and I thought, well, I guess I kind of am, really. I am a musician. Not a very good one, but I still got grade 8 down the line years ago.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But I'm not very good. Really good at like the theory of music, but I can read a score and do that kind of stuff.
But that for me is about emotion.
Of course, exactly.
That's the important part. Yeah. Is that great that you can read music, but it's a connection with the emotion that's coming off the page.
Totally. I was had kind of an epiphany moment with Daniel Hart on Pete's Dragon, where I was just it's beautiful and a beautiful score as well. Yeah. And that's the first time. And he's a super nice guy, and I love the music for his music. And his band are amazing too. Have you heard his band music?
Yeah,
amazing. Dark Rooms,
because they used that for Ghost Story.
Ghost Story, yeah
that track.
Song, yeah, the third song on the album. Yeah,
I think it might be one of my favourite songs for the last 10 years.
Whole album is fantastic.
Are you running late? Did you sleep too much? All the awful dreams felt real enough. Did you know that she waking up? Did she die in the night? Leave you alone. Just emptiness, no place like home, just a fucking mess. 20 messages to hurt your thumbs, what a stupid game, getting nothing done. With your longest track, your highest score, while you crush your back.
Soundtrack. I still haven't seen the actual film yet. It's because I'm a member of BAFTA and I get to the BAFTA films, but I didn't get that one last year. But I see it's on Netflix at some point this month, so every day I'm checking Netflix and like to watch it. But listening to that score, which I've listened to loads of times, you hear the kind of decomposition of that particular song you're talking about, and then it comes round, it's full circle in that score, which is beautiful. So we were just recording it like I normally do, and he said to me at the end, he said something I'd done before, his first massive thing, we've got the head of Disney Music there and all these people. He said to the end, I said, you've been fantastic, I'd love to credit you as a producer. And I was like, wow, that's great. Thanks very much, you know. And that was really a kind of thing. Okay, so I kind of can call myself a producer. So yeah, so that's 20 years ago. And now, the way things have changed, I've now got a home studio where I do a lot of mixing. And the last month, I was at Abbey Road for a couple of projects. One project with Abbey Road, with Benjamin Balfish there.
Yeah, you've done quite a few things with Benjamin, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done two in the last couple of months. King of Thieves.
Yeah.
And we just did one called Serenity.
All the stuff that going, oh my god, Jake has featured on this podcast a lot. I mean, all the Nick and Warren stuff,
yeah,
the various directors as well, yeah. Mellow High Water,
yeah,
and with David Michaud,
yeah,
with David War Machine McKenzie, and
yeah,
stuff as well. Yeah, and The Road has been mentioned a fair few times.
Yeah, The Proposition
people.
Gets mentioned a lot. That's yeah, one score that people go back to a lot. Yeah, so these days I've now got a home studio and I'm mixing a lot from there now, which is great because obviously I can spend time with my family a lot more. That's been great, and I had this amazing thing, which I've done last 3 weeks. I've worked with 5 female composers in a row.
Oh my god, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell me about them.
Which is unbelievable, and I was like counting them up, and it was extraordinary that, because people are saying, you know, there was a real thing about getting more female composers in there, and it was like, I was like, this is one, and then Lucy, my manager, put another session in, and I was like, that makes 5 in a row. It was extraordinary. So I did a couple of days with Anne Nikitin, and she was working on a project together as a Netflix documentary about Madeleine McCann. Not the most interesting,
wow,
but I mean,
yeah.
Lovely music, really interesting, but obviously slightly more traumatic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Particularly when my son, as he likes to do, is ask what I'm working on. It's difficult to explain that to a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
That was nice. And then I worked with a composer called Claire Singer, Claire M. Singer, and she is a performance artist who works out of Union Chapel.
Okay.
She works out of the Union Chapel. She's the organist there.
Oh, wow.
But she's also a cellist, and she writes this kind of really interesting music that's based on organ drones and playing around with the organ. That was her first feature film. So we mixed that in the studio. She came all over, and she was like my first kind of client to come back a few days in a row, and that was really nice, and she kind of hung out a bit after the end of the last session. That was really nice. Thank you. And then I did Vanity Fair with Isabel Waller-Bridge.
Yeah.
An episode of that, which is, I'm doing all of those, but I did one of the episodes with her. Mixing for Becca Dale.
Yeah.
That's it, that's five. Yeah,
yeah.
Got,
yeah,
that's five. So four different
that's
five
things. So please, can you put them in touch with us, because we're desperate to get more female composers
of course
on.
I will.
We've been asking for Misha to come on, Michele Carly Paradis, another one that we're trying to get on as well. So it's
I worked with Mika on
Under the Skin,
yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was, you kind of knew that was, I mean, the music was amazing. I mixed that and it was incredible to work. You've got a real sense of how intricate it was and how important to the film it was,
yeah,
and how interesting a score it was going to be. Director whose name I can't remember, Zoe Jonathan Glazer, and then the music producer called Pete Raven, who I've known on and off for years. In fact, I've mixed quite a lot of his scores recently. But yeah, it was really intense. It was really intense. We really, like, some of those cues we were working on for what felt like a day, even it might have been at least half a day on some of them, really, just to really, it was the nuances of them, so nuanced, tiny little changes to them, but again, it worked so well, and people, it's one of those scores that people ask me about all the time. Really interesting.
Each project's very different in terms of who's there, who's involved, and, you know, who has a kind of 5p's worth sort of thing. You know, you work really closely with the composer, but are the directors normally around, or do they kind of mostly leave it up to?
Most of the kind of long, big discussions have happened before they'll get to the stage. Let's put Nick and Warren to one side, because that is a completely different way of working.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the directors approved everything, because they've obviously heard. In the olden days, it would have been the piano demos, but now it's everyone can mock up with samples.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's got its own benefits and, you know, disadvantages, because sometimes we don't get to re-record those scores, but that's budgets and that's life, I guess.
Mm.
So, yeah, but then there's still the time when the director wants a small change, and it depends on the project. If it's a nice project with a bit of budget, then that's factored into the timescale. It's when it's, you know, a real tight one and, you know, you're really up against it. Sometimes my role is to keep my mouth shut and not say anything. But sometimes I can, through experience, you can see where you can say, well, how about we can just move the whole, we can move that, you know, move something by a couple of seconds, and it will just make a difference. It's understanding, it's translating people who don't necessarily know how to express themselves musically that I've kind of understood, kind of get my head into those, into their minds. To some degree. And I guess that's a kind of useful art to know.
Yeah.
Because you can obviously, there's plenty of people who are better at me that can say, yeah, you need to recompose it or chordal structure. But I guess working with people like Nick and Warren, where I'm the kind of conduit to their creativity. Because of working with them, I've done much more music editing as well. So, you know, which is a completely different art as well. So it's like, you know, taking it and taking the music and rearranging it for the change of cut or just rewriting it. And so, yeah, that's a really helpful skill to help answer those questions when you get, you know, do you need to tweak it a bit?
Yeah, with Nick and Warren as well, you know, the scores that they've done, but also for 20,000 Days on Earth,
yeah,
which you worked on as well, which was a fantastic project Ian and Jane did, which I love those pair, they're brilliant. Yeah. You know, that was a really interesting project in terms of, I just thought it was a really clever narrative that, you know, he and they were involved in, kind of fact, fiction, blurred lines, all that kind of thing. It was really clever having his own music in there, but then also all that. That must have been fun to work on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all projects with Nick and Warren are fun to work on. We put ourselves into a little bubble. We go down to a studio in Brighton, which is fantastic. It's really nice. You know, there's a lovely little studio down there on the studio owner's mum's land. Wow. And we set ourselves up in the studio for a week, stay in a hotel. We kind of work 10 till 7-ish, 10 till 8-ish. And then we've got a director like Ian and Jane or David McKenzie or David Michaud. They come along. And if not, we just do it by themselves and send stuff off. But with that, Ian and Jane came down and, of course, they're helping to create and curate and getting ideas down. So, you know, Nick and Warren will make some ideas. I'll then move it around, try to put one on top of the other. We'll talk about it. They'll shout instructions from the back. I'll, you know, ignore them, or more often than not, realise that their suggestions are brilliant. And I'm the one who's... Because sometimes that's what I have learned, is to listen to them, because it's like, that's what's so extraordinary about their musicality, is that because they come from a completely different musical background to I do. It's like, I'm like, what are you doing? This is crazy. And they're like, just do it, Jake. Just do it. Shut up and do it. And I'm like, okay. And then like 10 minutes later, it's the most brilliant piece of music. And I'm like, damn, how many times have I just like, you know, keep your mouth shut and just like do what they say? Because it's amazing what's got come up with. Because it's not necessarily my mindset to start with. And I've obviously learned over the years to go with it. Because sometimes, you know, they might do, on Jesse James, the session of Jesse James, we went into a different studio in Brighton, and that was, we would do again the same thing. We'd only had a script to work off that. We went in really early and we were working off the script, and we had about 3 minutes of footage, which is where I think he's wearing a skin and he walks into the ice, and there's an amazing shot of like him on some ice, and we were like, we'd be working on some stuff and getting ideas. Sometimes it just starts with a Warren loop, and then Nick or Warren will go down and put an idea on top of that, and then that one, then that makes, means the other guy will then crisscross off each other, so take it in turns. We only ever record pretty much one of them at a time,
yeah,
and then they just take it in turns with an idea and we build it up.
Amazing.
But often they start off as like kind of 5 or 6 minute pieces, and then we'll then edit that down to something that works for the picture. But for Jesse James, they'd be doing something, and then this is just before Grinder Man's kind of started to be thought of, so we would be doing like a piece of music, and then suddenly you can see them kind of get an urge to do something a bit more crazy, and suddenly like these kind of like 10 minute long kind of jams started, and all the band members would walk out from the control room because they were kind of bored of sitting around, like, yeah, because they would like, it was mainly the score, but then they were there to throw some extra sounds on, but they kind of realised that something was happening, so they kind of walk into the studio and it turned into this kind of epic of this kind of like 15 minute kind of like pre-Grinder Man thing, and it was kind of cool. And I look at the music editor, and we kind of like sit there and go, okay, great. And we just sit there and enjoy it. You know?
Like, it was like personal concert.
Yeah. And then it's another kind of, but it was a great way of like getting ideas out that, you know, because then go, well, if he takes that bit of that, it's like, okay, then we can base it on that, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
with this being your kind of, you know, you're doing a lot of stuff from home and stuff, yeah, as well, but having this as a base, Air Studios, and being in here, did you still kind of have pinch me moments where you might come in of a morning and something's going on?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is an amazing place. I'm sure you, when you come in, there's always something exciting happening, you know, yeah, the people you haven't seen for a long time. It's extraordinary, but you still get bits of spine tingles, whether it's here or Abbey Road when you walk in there. I had a moment quite recently when I was covering for Sean Murphy on the Han Solo.
Just throw that one in.
Clang that one in.
Han Solo
Sean
film.
Murphy, the American, American who was one of my kind of idols as I was growing up, but he's an American recording engineer, and he was recording the score with John Powell for Han.
Yeah.
And
I thought John did an amazing job.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And they did some pickups. I had 2 days at the end of the process where Sean was needed in Los Angeles mixing the final mix.
Yeah.
And so they asked me if I'd mind doing it. And it was like, I remember I'd seen them the day before, I think, and I said hello to, it was working with James Newton Howard, and I said hi. This is what happens, you know, you come in and it's like, it's James Newton Howard, and you've seen, I worked with him, you know, on like 10 scores as a tape op, but you say hello and give him a, you know, hug and everything. And that's what happens when you come in, you just see them. And so I said hello, and then Alison came in with Sean. She was looking at me kind of like knowing, like, whatever he says, just say yes. And I was like, okay. And he said, yeah, we've got 2 days of recording a Star Wars score. Can you be free? And Alison was like, he's nodding his head, and I was like, let me just think of my diary. I think I might have something, but I'm sure you can probably move it. And it's like that horrible feeling of like, Lucy, you have to move these things. And bizarrely, one of the things that actually was a project for Isabel Waller-Bridge, who his sister Phoebe is in the film. And in fact, they came along to one of the days that I was supposed to be working with Isabel. In fact, fortunately, at the same time, I was finding out whether she could move it. Her schedule changed and I didn't work on the project anyway. But on that Tuesday, it was really weird that she came in with Phoebe to watch a bit of the scoring session. I was there. It was like, so thank goodness that you were here.
Yeah. It was fate.
Yeah, fate.
Yeah.
But his score, John's score for that is incredible. did some of the bit at the beginning and some of it at the end, and then a couple of bits in the middle, and oh man, amazing. And yeah. then to get your first Star Wars credit. That's kind of thing you can never imagine getting.
Was that on the wish list then?
Yeah. I mean, it was beyond wishes, you know what I mean? It was extraordinary. So, and I've worked with John Powell a few times over the years. That was the amazing thing about being a tape op here, is just like everybody I work with. Yeah. And I guess and now it's a bit more different because there's people are coming through. I'm quite fortunate in that I record and mix for Spitfire Audio, who make samples. They're quite an up-and-coming company. And so everyone kind of knows my name a little bit, which is kind of nice.
And also from the 20 years you've been here.
Well, that's true,
Like you say, run our tape op, working your way up sort of thing.
Well, I'm on Thursday off to New York to do a presentation at something called MixCon.
Okay. your equivalent of Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. For real geeks.
Great.
But that's kind of extraordinary. That's kind of extraordinary to think that, you know, someone wants to pay for me to go to New York. You know, so I found waiting for my visa to come through, which is with the courier today. It's been delivered today. But yeah, I mean, there are times you come in here and you see people you've seen over the years, and I know so many people. What's nice is you know the musicians too. You know, that was a great thing. That was another thing you didn't realise as a runner, was that you get to meet all these amazing musicians. And by being the kind of runner, you're out there interacting with the musicians when their headphones don't work or when they've got a little problem or, you know, whatever. And that's a whole bunch of relationships you never realise you're going to have. But then also, then when you need to produce a session and you need to be kind of like the kind of grumpy one because we're running a short of time and we need to, or they're making a noise and you just need to be the thing, you've got a relationship with them, so you can kind of, they'll listen to you, they respect you for all the years, which is really nice.
That was the interesting thing when I came in to watch John's thing, you know, and he was just kind of sat in the corner. He wasn't really getting involved. He was just observing.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where there was one particular cue that's been recorded, and it was the most minuscule little thing. I think it was to do with timing.
Right.
And I was when I heard the request kind of going into the room to the musicians, I was like, what? And then it was so obvious when you heard it, the change and stuff. And that for me was just amazing to kind of see and to have a little glimpse of kind of what goes on.
Those moments that happen so regularly, as for me, kind of go without thinking, but you realize when you work with somebody like Benjamin Velfish, who really pushes musicians to the edge of their ability but what he asks them to do, because he's so brilliant a composer and such a brilliant musician and been a conductor, he really knows what he can get from his musicians. But it's hard, you know, he makes them work really hard. But you hear from the first time they play it to how they're pushed sometimes. I mean, sometimes they'll play a piece of music, the most beautiful thing you've ever heard, first time, and you're like, right, that's it, play it again. but then you can do the same thing, you push them and push them and push them, and then you just get this most incredible thing, because it's like, you know, like you would have done if you were Prokofiev or something, you know, like conducted in front of the orchestra, and again, pushing them to the nth degree to get this thing. It's amazing when you do, and when they buy it, when they understand the reason for it, you see it, you understand, you can get that vibe, and you see them by the end of it physically exhausted, physically and mentally exhausted, but they'll say that was the most amazing session. They understand what it is to make music, and they understand what it does to, I mean, even to film music, you know, to some degree, where it's behind.
But also in TV and in games as well, you know.
Yeah, games is a really interesting thing to be working on.
I'd really like to kind of sit down with you and a couple of other people in the gaming world to kind of sort of pick that apart, because I think as well it's something that's not really talked about. We touched on it with Lauren Bow.
Yeah.
You know, the work that he's done and stuff, but I think there's a whole diving down a rabbit hole.
Have you met Jess Curry? Curry, you should meet her, because she's done some amazing. She won the BAFTA 2 years ago for Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which I recorded and mixed, which is extraordinary, this music. We did another one for So Let Us Melt for a Google VR game. But she works with some guys from Sony, Jim Fowler, Joe Thwaites, who I'm working with next week. We're doing a VR game. Can't say much about it. But it's really interesting. I'm sure it'll be very interesting to talk to you about it. Again, that's a whole new world. And, you know, the first time I went to Sony to see those guys, and they gave me the prototype headphones and the mask and everything. It was for the game that Sony released with them, when they released their goggles. There was a game, 8 games or something, and we did the music for that. We were talking about that, early stages of that, and they put me through it, and it was like, this is a whole new world. Like, you literally could have that on in your front room, I think, and someone could rob your house and you'd have no idea, because you can't see anything, you can't hear anything, you've got headphones on, you've got nothing over your eyes, and you're in another world, and you end up, I remember going to a friend's house and playing it with a Star Wars game, I think, and ended up sitting on the sofa 90 degrees from where I started out from. He had no idea that I was sitting at a completely wrong angle.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, how is that even possible? I've done it. And then watching, my dad took along to Sony to play it. My dad's a musician. He was in a prog rock band, played saxophone, electric saxophones. But he went down and put this thing on and just blew his mind. I mean, you know, this is like a 70-year-old guy who's done loads of drugs and like, you know, made amazing albums and stuff. But then, like, to see him completely thrown by VR, which means the world for music of that is completely, you can make it up whatever you like.
Yeah, well, listen, I really hope we can maybe do different parts to this.
Well, let me speak to Jim and Joe next week.
Yeah.
Okay, are you around next week? Are you?
Yeah, I'm around, yeah.
Oh, I'll see you. Amazing. Coming on Monday.
Brilliant. Oh, Jake, absolute pleasure. Thank
nice
you
one.
So much,
nice
mate.
One.
Cheers.
By Jake as one of the favourite cues he's worked on, that song for Bob by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the air producer, mixer and engineer extraordinaire Jake Jackson. My huge thanks to Jake for taking the time to talk to us at the legendary Air Studios. If you're curious to know about all the scores he's worked on, head to IMDb. It is quite the list. We'll put a Spotify playlist up for the show at edithbowman.com, which is also the place to catch up with all of our previous episodes. Jake's efforts feature in plenty of them, including my chats with Davids, Mackenzie and Michaud. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please do keep sharing it with your friends if you like what you hear. Next up, a composer who's worked with everyone from Nora Ephron to Sir Richard Attenborough, Stephen Frears to Ken Loach on films like Memphis Belle, Dangerous Liaisons, Gandhi, The Crucible, Lady in a Van, and many, many more. Composer George Fenton is our guest next week. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company.